coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
What's cracking my nuts? Yeah, that's the way I'm starting the show from now on. What's grinding my peppers? It's Hey Kids Comics, what's up, fannies? With me. Yeah, I know, right? It's never going away now.
It's never going away, old Hollywood.
Old Hollywood. That's the voice of Cole Houston, as always. Cole, yes. What's up?
Well, I am, I think now, since we've done a whole damned episode, since then, and an ash can to boot, officially fully recovered from all con. I am back in the saddle and in the swing of things and ready to just go to bat for our fannies and
grabbing that giant forehead by the horns.
That's right.
That's what you're doing tonight, buddy.
That will make sense at some point.
We are joined by half of one of our favorite duos on the show tonight, Wonder Twin Towers Activate Show. Did I do it right this time?
You did.
Shit.
Oh my god.
Tanae is here tonight as well. And hi, say hi.
Hi.
Don't be so shy. Why are you so shy?
Say hi. Why are you judging me?
And somebody that, you know, also is joining us that would be pretty if he smiled more. Rick Gutierrez is with us tonight.
That's right.
Hi, okay. Rick.
Hello.
How are
you? we're trying to determine who's regretting this move more.
Me.
And, yeah.
Me. I'm regretting this move. I've got to cut this thing tonight, tomorrow.
Oh, sometime. My God, yes.
No, we could not be more thrilled. This is absolute swords. Rick, when was the last time you were on the show?
It's been a couple years, I think.
Let's see, we're at episode 306, and you were in episode 4.
it's been a while.
That's not true. It has been a while.
It has been a while, yes.
Yes, but we are more than happy that you're back on the show. Seriously, man, you were missed. Danae was on the show, I think, during one of the Marvel movie conversations was the last time you were here, or was that, yes, am I missing one?
That's right. I think that was the last time about a year ago during
Iron Man 3 being the best Marvel movie. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stand by
no
it.
No comment.
Still stand by it to this day. It's the best.
Oh, you have to figure out a way to figure out how to say Iron Man 3 in every podcast that you do.
I do. Sometimes I just yell Iron Man 3 and then go whoop, 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 and just run out the door and I'm gone.
And sometimes we mingle it with, like, say, Iron at one point in the show, Man at one point in the show, and 3, and then it becomes like that thing I saw with Jack Palance on Believe It or Not, where they showed where you could, like, find Shake and Spear in the Bible if you followed some ridiculous...
What was that thing that you kept bringing up in the Star Trek episode, Andy?
Which one? But first of all, I want to ask Cole how his humors are after bringing up Jack Palance hosting the Ripley's Believe It or Not show.
Let me just say, I feel like I need to do some one-armed push-ups.
Damn it. How's Cyborg 2 treating you?
It was Tim Russ. It was Tuvok. You kept fucking bringing
up... I need more green for Tuvok's ears. Tuvok.
So, I think it's time to grab Tuvok.
I will still bang
ears.
The hell out of Tuvok. Just know that.
Yeah. But I think it's time to grab Tuvok by the ears and get into the meat of this thing, because we got a lot of ground to cover.
We're never getting there tonight.
Between Andy's Tuvok obsession and the soon-to-be-revealed something about the forehead of steel that is upcoming... We do have a lot. This is, of course, Hey Kids Comics number 306. Yeah, one of us has to adult here. So may as well be the old guy. This is 306. What did we just see?
That's it.
And this is part one, Academy Reward.
Which is great, Cole. That's great. And yeah, we are talking about the Umbrella Academy tonight. Streaming on Netflix, if you haven't watched it, you know, has there been a stronger proponent, maybe the CW, of comic book TV shows than Netflix. The inventor of the long hallway fight.
Such a good hallway fight, though.
Well, and the thing about it is, it's sort of reminiscent. I think we have to acknowledge a trailblazer in the hallway chase.
Okay. Really?
I did not know where that was going.
I never knew. Welcome to my world, Scooby-Doo, huh? All right.
Oh, yeah. They would have the hallway chase, where sometimes the monster would be chasing them between all the various doors that somehow were interconnected despite the fact that they all faced a hallway.
You could go into,
like, a study or a bedroom and come out of the boudoir or whatever was down the hall there, and sometimes you would be chasing the monster, sometimes the monster would be chasing you.
They actually recreate the hallway chase, by the way, at a ride at Warner Brothers Movie World in Australia. You actually there's an actual Scooby-Doo ride, and they recreate the fucking hallway chase.
No, they don't. Oh, that's just an old guy in a mask chasing
around. Oh, that's right.
And it's brilliant.
I think it was old man Stuart Balk.
I got one of the two for you bleeding, meddling kids.
No. All right. Anyway, back to it. Umbrella Academy.
My adult last.
So who wants to Danae, some of this, since you're the only sane one right now. we'll get you worked up at some point, I'm sure. What is this show about?
So I wanna come at this from the angle of I haven't read the comics.
Sure.
Okay. So, for any fanboys that are gonna tell me, you're not emo enough, and I knew who Gerard Way, blah, blah, blah.
You're not emo enough.
Good for you. That's awesome. I'm in love with Robert Sheehan and the Misfits. So, whenever I saw the trailer for this, it wasn't even a trailer, it was like a picture on Instagram, and I saw Robert Sheehan, I was like, I'm in. I don't care what it's about. If it would have been about, you know, kids selling umbrellas, I would have absolutely watched it because Robert Sheehan is in it. So I went into it honestly not knowing what it was about, and I tried not to like watch any of the other trailers and stuff, and I went into it completely blind. And
hello, I'm Robert Sheehan, and tonight we're going to talk about TV's Penguin's obsession with parasols.
I would have watched it. And
that was the worst Sheehan impression.
Yeah, I don't even know what that was.
I have no idea who that was.
That was Cole Stanley.
But we got, like, when we sat down to watch it, like, they immediately, and I've watched this show twice now, all the way through, by the way. Just
nice.
Putting that out there. Nice. When we sat down to watch it, and it starts out with, like, there was, I'm going to say the wrong number, 42, was it 43? I'm going to say the wrong number. 43 babies all born at the same time whose mothers weren't pregnant. And I was like, what? Like, I have no idea what I'm getting myself into. And so essentially break it down for people who haven't. And then if you're, I don't know why you're listening to this if you haven't.
We're going to get into spoilers here, people.
Spoilers. There's a really rich dude's like, I want to adopt these kids.
And sound like Professor Broom in Hellboy.
Sound like every mildly German professor every movie or TV show.
Here's the other thing. That guy was totally, and I just forgot the name of the movie, so that's really terrible. He was in The Chronicles of Riddick, and I was like blown away that was the same guy, because he's all in old makeup or whatever. But
they couldn't afford new makeup with all that CG.
I mean, it's amazing how it ages you putting on old makeup.
Yeah. Well, that damn monkey set him back a fortune.
So I feel like this is the worst explanation of the show ever. So I'm sorry. I'm loving this.
Well, please
this
continue.
This is exactly what we do to each other.
Yes, please continue. This is the best.
Yeah.
No. So, like, Chris wants me to do a show with my dad where we explain stuff because we explain things terribly because I never remember people's names. And I'm like, you know, the hairy guy. And so.
Keep going. So right now we've got. Yeah. Right now we're at year into Sheehan. 43 mothers gave birth to children without being pregnant. And some old dude bought them all.
So basically, if you like X-Men and quite possibly liked My Chemical Romance at some point. This is like the two of those got in the back seat of a car at prom, and Robert Sheehan walked out with a feather boa.
Yeah, and that, see, that's why we really need to push for this kind of, you know, empirical, apocryphal sex education, because this is the sort of thing that happens. And it, while beautiful,
you don't use protection.
I want to go on record right now on this show and say, Danae, if you do like a short movie blog, I would read it every single day. Like,
I beat the shit out of that blog.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Here's Free Jack. Like, what? How did that happen? If Mick Jagger had sex in the back of a Pinto with...
I don't know how to explain it.
It's great. No, I'm not kidding. This is fantastic.
Because I love... Here's why it was so great for me. I love comics. I love superheroes. I love the X-Men. But also, I listen to a lot of shitty emo music and a lot of bad 80s music. And to be honest, I still do. So, if you, like, want to put on lots of eyeliner and watch people kick ass, but also be, like, emotionally broken down into your high school emo self, this is the best show for you ever.
So... I was emo high school.
So, let me get into... So, you brought up a very valid point that I would love... That I'm going to touch on.
Or explore it. Go ahead.
No one is allowed to speak ill of Gerard Way in my presence. he is a young god among men. Only if for no other reason, if for no other accomplishment in his life or career than he was tapped by Grant Morrison to be kind of the next Grant Morrison, sort of the way Alex Moore will never admit it, but he kind of tapped Grant Morrison to be the next, you know, that generational weird esoteric comics guy. As you work down the line, that's Gerard Way now, to the point where he's doing the Dutroll comic, DC, and he did, like, he was involved in Young Animals with, like, Cave Carson and. Like, just this awesome, weird chaos magic, you know, bizarre ass shit that I absolutely adore. With, like, he's the guy now. Let alone the fact that, you know, I drank a lot of red wine and wrote a lot of notebooks to the music of My Chemical Romance when I was in high school and college. Let's just excise that from my entire life. But, you know.
I wanted to make sure that Lily brought up for, like, one tiny second. Wasn't he working at Nickelodeon, and then My Chemical Romance took off? And he's like, well, I'll kind of do the band thing for a while. So he was, like, a creator. Yes. And a writer and an artist before he was a musician anyway.
Yeah, he was a creative, visual creative, and, you know, a writer. He was a musician. That's his first love. So... It plays into his... God, I'm going to sound like such a... Like I'm writing a Pitchfork review from 1998. You know, a lot of his music plays into that creative narrative, that story cycle. Especially, they did an album called Killjoy, which was, I think, their last album was My Chemical Romance. It has since been turned into a comic book that was written for that purpose. It was a rock opera. It was an experimental album that was written with the express purpose of turning it into a comic book. And yes, awesome. Just amazing. The True Lies of the Fabulous Killjoys is fantastic. But regardless, that is who Gerard Way is. Gabriel, and I always want to pronounce it Ba. Does anybody have it, Rick?
I think you're about correct, actually.
Okay. I left you open to make fun of me, but you didn't. And I will remember. You show me your belly and I will take advantage. No. So yes, that's who he is. And to touch on another thing as we, because I want you just to continue throughout the entire show with this review, just at various points, allowing us to break in.
You have to be prepared for that.
You're the Greek chorus. The 40 and Rick and Cole, I want you to chime in on this, please. The 43 children that to unpregnant mothers was such, I felt that was such a clever way to get around the X gene or the meta gene.
Yeah, it just happened.
Yeah. Yeah, like you need to introduce this.
Let me give a little bit of background on how I started watching this show, because at first everybody was like, oh, Umbrella Academy, blah, blah, blah. And I honestly did not have the time, and the reason why is because of one act here in Texas, trip to California, trip to D.C. I mean, it's been a really busy couple of months. And Molly, my wife, was like, you need to see the show. You need to sit down and you need to, like, make the time and watch the show because I need to talk to somebody about it. I'm like, okay. So I sat down, and then, like, the fact that, like, they hit us with that thing with the 43 women around the world giving birth simultaneously, none of them showing any signs of pregnancy. I was like, okay, the hooks are in. I'm going to have to watch this from beginning to end.
Yeah, right? It's a great hook.
What was amazing is how it was presented, because especially if you're like most of us here tonight, if you're unfamiliar with the source material, you had no idea where this whole Russian swim team thing was headed.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's the cautionary tale of kissing boys will get you pregnant.
In Russia,
kissing boy get you pregnant.
Are we really making Yakov Smirnoff?
Wow.
As long as I live, there will be Yakov Smirnoff jokes.
I thought you just weren't supposed to swim in a pool with a boy. So she made that. It was a double mistake. She got double pregnant.
The problem was, kind of like in Batman, where there was a vat of chemicals that made Joker, it turns out that there was a leak from the sperm bank into the swimming pool.
That's what they called that one boy.
Oh, God.
It was probably the parts per million were like, you know.
They thought they had a saltwater pool, but there was a leak.
Gross.
Wow.
And there it is. Now she's with us. All right.
That's why the water was so thick.
Oh, God.
Why is this Russian water so ropey?
Oh, no, come on.
It gets comics after dark.
like anyone didn't know that this is where the show was going tonight, let's be honest. But yeah, yes.
Yeah, what a great way to bring you in, and then Hart just sort of shows up dressed as Airboy, and I'm fresh in cosplay as Airboy, you know. And like, well, you know, then he's like doing the Blues Brothers. Hey, you, how much for your kids? I want to buy your children.
Which, by the way, weirdest, like, that's not a red flag?
Yeah, exactly. But it's Russia. In Russia, everything a red flag.
What's worse is, like, I mean, obviously, people, they didn't expect to have a baby, so people weren't, like, prepared or whatever. But this whole show, they're talking about, like, how he was such a shitty dad. Like, your parents sold you. Like, your mom was like, I don't want you. I don't, like, and speaking as someone who is a mother, like, if I were to just, like, be pregnant and then have a baby, that's your child. That's very hard to get rid of. But, like, that's, you sold your, they were mad at the wrong person. If someone paid money for you, he's not going to be super kind to you.
Okay, let's take, I'm going to say that swimming pool baby is Vanya.
Yes.
Because you get the distinct impression that their names in many cases are indicative of where in the world they came from. So right. It was like this weird, you know, Brady Bunch, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego vibe going on. But, okay, let's just say Vanya.
Okay.
She would have been a ward of the state if she was lucky. They probably would have sent her up to, you know, Dr. Smirnoff, and she'd have been like...
Any relation?
No, not at all. he has to live that down constantly.
My name is Dr. Smirnoff, no relation.
No relation. No relation to vodka, no relation to comedian. Leave me alone.
I just want pool babies.
Yeah, is that a better life for her? She's a published author. She got first chair in the
like I get being upset that your daddy doesn't love you and you have a robot mommy, but also like you were. I don't know.
Wait. Let's back. I want to back up a second and ask you, Danae. Is there anything more Gerard Way than the sentence, "Your daddy doesn't love you when you have a robot mommy"?
That's the name of my album, right?
I want to point out the coolest thing is though, how many kids grew up with a monkey valet?
That was the coolest thing, and so Chris didn't even like that character, and I was so excited because if you know people have turning to octopuses and you know whispering things and controlling minds wasn't weird enough. Like there's a monkey that helped raise you. That's even better. Like why are you complaining? I wish a chimpanzee raised me.
Well, Pogo is really nice and sweet and all, but the dung. There's something you cannot genetically engineer out of monkey.
Here's something you don't know. Monkeys can't get their own pants on. I mean, it's a fact.
Oh, and then there's also, like, the...
The chimpanzee, so...
There's also the Stan Lee monkey character that Catherine came up with that was foiled by the Invisible Woman. Because monkey couldn't see, monkey couldn't do.
At least this monkey didn't pee in a perfect arc into his own mouth, okay? I'm just saying.
Not that we know of.
Best thing about Pogo, the monkey valet, is a great sentence that I just said, is that that character is the sanest character in the entire show.
I know!
That's the best part about it.
He's the only one who has no issues about, you know, he's like Rocket Raccoon if Rocket was okay with being a genetic experiment.
Right.
He's like zero bitter. It's like, hey, you know, this beats the hell out of peeing in a perfect arc into my own mouth.
Hot tip, nothing does. Nothing beats it. Just know that. Where were we in the show? Okay, so Danae, where did we leave off?
Oh, all the skiddos got adopted, and he starts doing testing and finding out they have powers. But guess what? One of them doesn't, or so we think. By the way, I'm just going to say it. I called that from the very first time they said she had no powers. I was like, she gonna kill them all. She got the most power. Like, I knew that was really obvious.
Oh, I think that's a trope that sadly becomes a little more obvious because we've seen it and seen it. But at the same time, they played the burden of being the powerless one. Because it's like, at that point, you know, you've already blown the money. Just kick her to the curb, for God's sake.
Well, do you think that the new X-Men movie... is going to be hurt by them doing a better version of the Dark Phoenix saga in Umbrella Academy than they're going to do in the movie?
I just think it's going to hurt. It's going to be hurt because it sucks.
It had nothing to do with anything but the ineptitude over Fox.
The coolest thing for me is like I'm watching it and they're talking about how she doesn't have any powers and she has to take these, you know, and within the first couple episodes, if you are an X-Men fan, you know, you start realizing that it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of homage, kind of like, you know, little like Hyperion is to Superman, you know.
Well, and the thing is, Hargreaves is like Professor X who has to call the pharmacy for his powers.
Right. Yeah. Right. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is Dark Phoenix Saga. That's what we're seeing here. She ain't gonna kill them all, and ain't gonna be pretty.
I feel like what's really cool about it, and one of the reasons, like, I am so obsessed with the show, and I think that it is doing so well, is because we did all know that, but what's happening with X-Men movies is that they're trying to act like we don't know what's going to happen, so they're still trying to surprise us, and this show was like, look, here's some really obvious things that are going to happen, but we make it entertaining still. And that's really difficult to do because I know there were several times Chris was like, did you watch ahead? I'm like, no, it's really.
Yeah, really.
But I still wanted to watch it. I wasn't like, I already know she's going to kill everyone. I don't care. I was like, I can't wait to find out how they explain it or how they explore it. Whereas the rest of us who love X-Men are like, cool, Dark Phoenix, we already know, but I don't care how you're going to explore it.
What can you possibly do that I don't already know? Oh, look, yeah. she beat up Beast. She never did that before. Hooray. But I'm with you there is that it's not the knowing, or the knowing doesn't detract, because it's such good story craft. Yes. You're presented with such a compelling tale that, you know she's going to be involved in some degree, but that takes a back seat to everything else going on, because the Academy themselves, brilliantly cast, brilliantly portrayed, and then you throw in this X element of Hazel and Cha-Cha.
Yes.
And it's like, Catherine, my wife, I loved Preacher on AMC.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And there was such a Preacher vibe. It was sort of like the X-Men and Preacher had another unfortunate baby because they didn't attend that class about abstinence.
Well, and there was a couple of moments where, the dance scene, where I love that kind of stuff, like I eat that shit up. But Chris was like, oh man, is this show gonna be like Legion? And
there's
a
no
lot
show
of people,
like Legion.
I felt like Legion went maybe too far out of people's comfort zones, and this rode that line.
Absolutely.
It was like, here's like of this awkward, weird stuff that are going to make people uncomfortable, but it doesn't go too far to where people stop watching it.
It's like Legion if Legion made any sense.
Right.
I mean, I loved the first season of Legion. I
tolerated.
I tried to watch the second season, but I felt like I don't even remember what I watched the first season anymore.
That people are so tired of like cookie cutter superheroes, and so many people are like, let's do like the weirdos, and it's hard to do that because either you do it like too straight laced and you're like, these are fake emo kids, or you do it too weird and it's Legion. And Umbrella Academy just rides that line where it's like, here's the stuff for the weirdos, but if you like straight laced hero stuff, you could still enjoy it. It's not too
well,
terribly
I'm just
going
to go out there and say, if you're listening, DC Streaming, brother, power the geek.
Listen, DC Streaming, does anybody here besides me have it?
I can't invest in it. I'm waiting till the rest of, I don't know.
I understand.
It has way too much for me to watch, and I think that's the problem, is that it's like almost overkill.
Okay.
Well, there's so many services now, but that's a different tale.
So,
yeah.
The Doom Patrol, Titans was okay.
That's what I've heard.
The Doom Patrol show is straight up knocking it out of the park in ways.
Isn't Matt Bomer in it?
Matt Bomer's in it. Alan Tudyk's in it. Brendan Fraser's in it.
You're not allowed an opinion. Matt Bomer's in it. So that's just like me. As soon as Matt Bomer's in it, I'm like, amazing. And it's white collar back.
But he wears bandages
love
the entire time. You never see his face.
Why would you cast Matt Bomer and
because
hide
it's
his
that
face?
Good a show. but it's doing all the right things. So eventually we're going to do a show on that once I can figure out a way to put it in Cole's grubby little mitts.
That's right.
But anyway, so Danae, back to the show. Where were we? Mad at Daddy? Were we mad at Daddy still?
Mad at Daddy. We're finding out who has powers, who doesn't. I think the difference between X-Men is, you know, there's like that divine purpose, and they're like straight up mutants, like, and they go to Xavier for help. In this case, it's like, hey, you're gonna fight crime, and I'm gonna teach you how to do that in our creepy little maze house. I am the worst at explaining things. I don't know why you're letting me
you're
do
so
this.
Good. This is so good.
But you bring up a salient point that we have to touch on, is the production design, the like knee biter level imagery set into the walls.
Yes.
Of how to disarm your opponent
kill
with bare hands. Something like, it's like pages out of a Dick and Jane murder book.
That's true.
And the cool thing was, they never told
us.
Which
got told when I was a kid. I loved Dick and Jane murder books.
They never told us what they were preparing.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't.
And we still don't know what they're preparing for.
We know a little more in the comics. Now, keep in mind, I've only read the first arc, and that was when it first came out, okay? So the first arc is the first season.
Yeah.
But apparently we know a little more in the comics.
How close is it, the comic book, to the actual series?
The comic, in some things, the pacing was a lot faster.
Okay.
And in other things, let's put it this way, comics versus TV show. We know a lot more about Ben from the TV show than we know in the comics.
Oh, interesting.
Ben, they didn't give you anything in the comics besides, you know, from like the first half of the first issue, he's dead, and you don't find anything else about that.
Okay.
In the TV show, obviously, we find out a lot more about Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, the pacing on the stuff with, what's his name? The guy we think is the bad guy that isn't the bad guy. See, I'm as bad as Danae is with names here to talk about things.
I'm supposed to have the IMDb page open while I talk so that I don't make a fool of myself.
I've got it open and I'm just looking the other direction.
Yeah, we're
right
almost
now.
Still spitballing here.
Yeah, I'm looking in the other direction right now. I should look back at the thing I'm actually looking at. Leonard Peabody. That stuff happens a lot faster because they don't really play up the time it takes him to get Vanya into his and can, you know, it happens pretty damn fast in the comic.
In the comic versus the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in the show the pacing was brilliant. Show.
But you can get away with that because they really more heavily explored, you know, like the action-y type stuff in the comic,
right.
Versus, you know, and in the show it was definitely paced well, but there wasn't a whole lot of action.
Yeah,
I mean, relatively speaking, and I think this also comes from anything that adapts someone else's work.
Yes,
you begin to take your own approach. You introduce new characters. You take what's there and fit it to an entirely different format. Mm-hmm. And television's demands are far different. Had this originally been written for television, I think this is damned close to what it would have been.
Yeah.
And had that then been adapted to a comic, who knows? But
well, and Way was involved in the TV show as well, so he kind of signed off on it. You know, he understands that it's a different medium. So you can't...
And Netflix has made... I mean... even if you're writing for something, people are going to have to wait a week to watch. With Netflix, you full well know someone is going to sit down and watch the entire series in one day. And so pacing is almost more important because storytelling has completely changed with this new binge fad that we have. Because whenever, like, we watch Heroes, for example, they could give you cliffhangers because there was a week. And there's no point in doing big giant cliffhangers anymore because people are just going to click next episode.
Right.
Exactly.
So it makes you have to have good enough writing that you don't rely on cliffhangers. And I was a huge fan of Heroes. I was a huge fan of their cliffhangers, but I forced myself to like drag out Umbrella Academy because I didn't want to watch it in one day.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, the thing about it is Umbrella Academy does what a lot of these shows do brilliantly especially when they're written for a streaming service that's going to dump 100% all at once, is they don't necessarily do big cliffhangers, but they do give you these tantalizing bites that make you say, you know, what's another hour? I can go a full day of work on an hour and a half of sleep.
I don't know. That last episode was a pretty damn big cliffhanger, though.
Well, but that's the last episode. It's not like you can dial up the next one yet.
Yeah.
But one of the cool...
Real quick, I just can't say, it has already been announced. It's official. Umbrella Academy was renewed.
Oh, yeah.
Announced today for a second season. Yeah. Like, we didn't see that coming, but it's still kind
of
cool.
One of the things that Umbrella Academy did with Netflix that I didn't see a lot of shows do with Netflix is they set up cliffhangers that aren't resolved for like two or three episodes.
That's right. True.
So you're given a cliffhanger that isn't resolved in the next hour. So to speak to your point, Cole, about like what's another hour, it becomes another 3 hours.
Yeah.
They do a great job. That was very salient. One of the other big differences between the comic and the show is that Hazel and Cha-Cha in the comic, they are in no way, shape, or form sympathetic, and you never figure out who they are.
Oh, really?
Ah.
Oh,
they're
wow.
They're just straight killers. They're not sympathetic. Wow. They don't have – they're just vicious, psychopathic killers that are hired to go after – that's it. That's their job. They are – they, you know, nobody goes on the run with the waitress. Nobody – it's just like murder all the time.
Wow.
And reading that, but reading that is like easier, is more palatable than watching it. So obviously, sure, they're going to have to make that difference when you're having to see it with your own eyes.
Yeah. And it also brings in a wonderful element of humor and builds on it, develops them as characters where they're not just murder machines coming in, killing everybody. They become what they ideally would have been as human beings,
right.
You know, with a very strict purpose. But you also get that wonderful interaction that put us in the mind of Preacher, where, you know, you've got them like Hazel complaining about the conditions under which they work and how all the funding, you know, they're the ones suffering when this funding gets cut. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is like some super secret time traveling organization, and it's such a damn bureaucracy. It's like the mob in Fargo.
And the fact that the tubes show up anywhere, like,
yes,
that was a great nod.
Cool. Right. One thing that probably no one else would understand except for Andy, because no one else watches Patriot but us. Hazel made me think so much of the brother.
Yes.
Like, the whole time I wanted him to put on a tracksuit.
A tracksuit? Yeah, like an Adidas tracksuit and walk around Kiev or somewhere.
I was like, where's the Beastie Boys right now? Like, there's so much good music. I need Beastie Boys and an Adidas tracksuit. Like, I thought that the whole time, and I was like, oh my God, Andy's the only other person who will understand.
Okay. Patriot is a fantastic show.
And we're all movie buffs. How much of a – one of the things I love in modern cinema is the music direction.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love, like, Pulp Fiction and Goodfellas. And
like, you know which one had a really good soundtrack recently? Was Bumblebee. Bumblebee had a really good, solid 80s soundtrack to it.
I will take your word for that.
So, obviously. But I meant to see it. It's actually a really solid 80s soundtrack.
The only, like, I love the music, too. Here's my biggest complaint. Is that as much as the shows I could predict, there was not one Smith song,
right.
And I was waiting for it the whole time. I was like, where's the Smiths?
Season two.
Morrissey pissed off Gerard Way at some point. Like, I was
it
like,
would have been a little on the nose, though.
It might have been. Too predictable, because I really was expecting it, like, hardcore.
But it was
brilliant.
And talking to that music, how brilliant the scene when Luther puts on the record. Mm-hmm. On the record player, and you have this wonderful dance like nobody's watching moment, and you see how perfectly awkward even a moment of joy is for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to be joyful, and we see later why, like, you know, recreation is from 11:30 to 12:00 p.m.
Yeah, right.
Holy crap. Like 30 minutes a week.
But it also was a little touching to see that they kind of, you know, you have that reunion, like everybody gets back together moment.
Yes.
Where it's like it used to be with the music playing too loud and everybody's in their own space. You know,
yeah.
Like you imagine that that's what it was like when they were kids, which
and
is
then
sad.
You get that,
but yes.
Get that brilliant dollhouse shot, which just underscores everything, because you get the vignettes and then you are presented with absolutely everybody in their space and you become the ultimate voyeur.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where it pans out and it's literally
You get to see exactly what everybody is up to.
It was extremely well shot, the entire
thing. Oh, yeah. And the other, the scene much later with Luther and his sister.
I cried.
They're not related. They're like they're like Brady's sister and brother.
The afternoon delight scene.
Yeah,
yeah, I might have shed a tear during that.
Dancing in the moonlight.
It was fantastic. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
And oh my God, it's like that song now is meaningful.
Yeah.
It has depth and color and and Fudd, it just, I never imagined that song being so, you know, rendered so amazing, sublime. And, you know, those were the points where this grabbed me because of the way it made the music part of the story.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to talk about something, I mean, we haven't even, like, mentioned the whole reason they get back together is because their dad dies. So it's a very, like, solemn moment in all their lives, even if it's somewhat celebratory because they hated his guts. So having those, like, moments of joy and those, like, nonsensical things are so important so that it doesn't get too dreary. Mm-hmm. So the way that they balanced out the harder to deal with moments with the music was just, it's so easy to mess up and so hard to do and not seem cheesy. And yeah. I feel like they did it. 'Cause I know some, I mean, again, Legions where they tried to do that and it just, they
went. It seemed like in the first season they did well. And then after that, it just.
What also helped balance out the dreary moments was Klaus in general.
Oh, here we go.
Like, just I thought he was an absolutely brilliant character. At first, I was like, "Oh, this guy's annoying," you know, whatever with him.
Yeah,
like, he grew on me and really just brought the show together in a way that I wasn't expecting. When his powers finally fully manifest, I was blown away.
Thank God, I know.
I thought he was brilliant, and then I started watching Mortal Engines, and like, lo and behold, he's fucking there too.
I was telling Danae about that. Crap. It took me half of that movie to figure out it was him. Because every time we see him, it's like Misfits or this, and he's kind of strung out. And then he's put together.
So good in this, and. Yeah. He really brings the show together in a way that, like, none of the other characters really do, with maybe, for me, Hazel and Cha-Cha.
Him being, like, the biggest, like, he's not the biggest outcast, because obviously Vanya is, but he's second to her, the biggest outcast of the actual Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, get off my page, because I was going to say that as the powered ones go, if Vanya croaked, he would be like the new one to have to stay home.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as powers go, it's like you're almost less than useless. I mean, what do you do when the bank robbers come? Like, channel dead people who died at the bank? I don't get it.
You know? Yes, and yet he holds, like, the group together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's, I'll have my tiny moment. I promise, Andy, I won't dwell too much on Sheehan. But he, for me... I think that's where I first heard about it was because I was following him on Instagram after Bad Samaritan, which is a film he did with David Tennant. And it's really good. You guys should see it. It didn't have a lot of success in the U.S., but
we
watched Misfits not that long ago, and that's why we watched Bad Samaritans, because I was like, we have to watch more. All the Sheehan.
Where have you not seen Misfits... Yeah, where can we find it? Because I'm kind of curious now.
It's on Hulu. Okay. Or it was.
I think it still is.
And I have watched Misfits is a older show. I watched it was like on Pirate Bay when I watched it, and that was like 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
That show is another one of the like quirky British superhero. They're not really superheroes. People's powers. And Robert Sheehan is the comedic relief. You don't even find out what his power is until like the second season, I don't think. Correct. They draw it out forever. And so you're like, oh, he's so useless, but why is he so lovable and disgusting at the same time? He's disgustingly lovable. And he is like, I know so many people don't like Klaus, and some people still, after watching the whole series, were like, oh, he was my least favorite character. I think he did such an amazing job, and if no other part was likable, him going to Vietnam,
it gave his character a chance to become a different kind of character, and it was unnecessary.
It gives his character an opportunity to breathe, and it gives his character an opportunity to take the stage for a little bit and tell us, you know, give us a little more insight on him. And it's so beautifully handled in the Vietnam episodes.
But it's also the fast track of the hero's journey.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, very much
so. He literally gets to have everything happen to us in a split second. And I think that that's vitally important to the tale of this character. He has to be forced to mature. Yeah. Otherwise, he's a non-entity, even more so than Vanya. At least she, you know, has a good job.
And when he comes back, he's so significantly changed as a person that you can see it in his character, like, for the rest of the series.
Here's what I found really interesting about his character in Vanya. And I didn't sink in until after the show was completely over, was the way that those two characters mirror each other. In the sense that he self-medicates to remove his powers because they're too much. She's being forced to take medication for her powers because they are too much, down to the point where the showdown, right, really is his character and Vanya, because he manages to use his powers after figuring out how to control them and stop self-medicating to channel Ben, and she's using her powers to basically cause the apocalypse. I thought that was a really interesting juxtaposition of the two characters that are considered the most worthless characters in their group.
Exactly. They're both elevated brilliantly in the story. And we can't talk about this show without talking about some Luther. Holy God. I mean, the second he first appears on screen, because and one of the other things this does brilliantly is, you know, this is going to be funky when Luther's on the damn moon taking the trash out.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's a wonderful jumping off point, because it tells your audience you're in for an unusual ride that you're not prepared for in all likelihood. But if you go with it, you're going to love it.
And that's ridiculous. Some of the rest of the story is, I had no idea where they were going to go with him. Like, obviously it was going to be like the fallen of the number one, and him finding out, you know, he's not the strongest or whatever, but that I had no idea it was going to be like a half ape. There was even a moment where like they put him on the moon because he's a werewolf and then he can't see.
That was the same thing.
I was like, for the longest time, right up until like I was asking the wife, I was like, what is going on with him? And she's like, oh, you'll find out. And then when like you see a tear in his shirt.
Yep.
And then I'm like, okay. And then that's around the point, like, that's around episode two or so. That's around the point I realized his head is way too small for that body.
Oh, are you kidding? From the moment he was first appeared, I thought, how wonderful that this character's body is much, like, every part of him is enormous except his head. And I thought that was just part of, you know, who he was. Never would have imagined where that was headed, but the prosthetics and the costuming were absolutely brilliant because it sold that idea. And it was very much like, you know, pre-CGI Mr. Hyde in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
When it was practical effect, it worked brilliantly, except that with a tiny head.
The thing about Luther that struck me is we can talk about the Sheehan, which is just what I'm going to call him now.
Okay.
He doesn't have a character's name anymore. You know, or any of the characters, but Luther has the unique honor of having the saddest story arc in the entire show.
Oh, I know.
Just heartbreaking. Finding out that his dad's... Oh, really? Because you got sent to the moon, and you sent back everything, and your dad buries it under a bunch of floorboards and does literally nothing with it.
Well, not only does he do nothing with it, he saves it all unopened.
Yeah, he doesn't even crack it open.
The biggest middle finger is that he saved it. He didn't put it in the garbage. Because obviously there's a dumpster right outside the damn brownstone.
See, I'm dubious about that, because Allison's arc is pretty devastating as well.
Did Especially, Allison have to wear, you know, wear a fishnet shirt and go dancing at the club.
Well,
did Allison have to wait until she was in her 30s to get laid? I don't think so. She's got a kid.
She gets her throat slit and then can't talk anymore. That's pretty devastating.
Loses her power.
Yeah, she loses her power.
How long did she like lost her power within 48 hours period? Luther's been effed with for 20 years.
He got his head stuck on a monkey body.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but I would argue that for what it's worth with me, I think Allison's is the one that hit me the hardest.
Okay, I'm going to check the market value, Rick. Okay, it's actually got some value.
Also, Allison's, I know that she was attempting to be altruistic, but Allison's downfall was Allison's had no control over his monkey body.
The other thing with her that really kind of grabbed me and like was like, okay, she may be an effective crime fighter, but she's an ineffective parent.
Right.
She has to use her power.
That's why.
Yeah. I mean, she has to use her power to soothe her kid at night. It's not as simple for her as, you know, reading a book to the kid. It's like, I heard a rumor that you were tired. And it's like, okay.
It also, I think, illustrates that that all of them, with maybe the exception of Luther, have addictions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a very strong tone that runs throughout, is she is addicted to her own power.
Yeah, very much.
Because she's only raised to only use it, though, too, because I think that's where the bigger moment came for me with that, is I was like, man, that's hard to like feel any kind of empathy for her as a mom, because she has no idea how to be any other way.
Exactly.
None of them had an idea how to be anything.
Well, and none of them knew. She certainly didn't know how to be a parent. But I will point out that she saved thousands of dollars a year on Ritalin.
There are those times when I would love power.
Her stinking ex didn't take that into account, did he?
Well, I'm sure that's the point. You and every other parent out there were like, yes, that's there. There would be some point in my, you know, where I would have absolutely done that, even if they're joking. But imagine that's you were raised with that ability, right? You were raised with that ability. You were sequestered into a weird maze house with a bunch of other kids that weren't related to you, and spent 23 hours of your day learning how to use powers to fight crimes. And then you're put in a situation where you can almost instinctually use those powers. You use them, and then you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, that has to, you know, they weren't trained to be anything other than what they are. So
yeah, that's true.
I'm not saying that makes her innocent. I'm just saying.
Well, no, but they have no interpersonal skills. It's that whole like homeschool kid thing, right? Like any type of
You keep stealing my idea.
Any type of like interpersonal interactions that you would have by being around other children or being around an actual parent. And so because all she has had is her power, because all of us would be like, yeah, if I had that power, I would do it. But all of us also have like normal parenting skills. She has no choice. Like there's no maternal instincts. She was like raised by a robot. So those maternal instincts are not gonna kick in. And so I struggled with liking her. And I think that was a moment where I was kind of like, man, try being a parent without having a good parental guide and only having that power.
I think that the moment where inevitably you have to start to see her that way is the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just heart wrenching, made me weep.
Yeah.
And it was just a very powerful scene because Luther is, I think that is also one of the points where you see precisely how much he loves her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he can empathize with her and speak the words that she cannot. He knows exactly what needs to be said in this moment, and it's just a beautiful scene. And of course, we have to talk about number five.
Yes, we do.
Or as his nameplate says, his desk, Mr. Number Five.
There's a theory going around that number five is actually Hargreaves.
I have a theory that number five is a robot that became self-aware and was befriended by Steve Gutenberg.
But
and is he alive though?
According to him, vehemently alive.
Is that a short circuit joke?
That is a short circuit joke.
I love you.
And you will sit there and you will take my short circuit.
This is why we're family.
As much as I immediately loved Klaus because I already had an affinity for that actor, I had no attachments to anyone else. I mean, I guess big four-headed Juno. Whatever.
Damn you.
No. But coming into this, I didn't know which characters I would like and stuff. And so I was like, well, Klaus is going to be my favorite. Five, I really, really like him. And that actor is incredible.
Was that not mind-blowing?
What's more mind-blowing is that he comes from a Nickelodeon background and actually has acting chops.
Yeah, really.
Wow.
That shocked me. Also, I had
How
to
did he get Google through
his, I don't know. I had to Google his age because I was like, please tell me that you're 18 because you're very cute. And then I felt like a pervert because he's not.
Now
I feel like a pervert.
I was a man and I said that I'd be going to jail. But he's such a cute kid. And he has that older demeanor. That's what Joe Biden says too. So I'm still a pervert. Anyway.
Keep digging it. Just keep digging that hole.
Joe Biden
said that too.
And you said you couldn't describe things properly here.
The acting chops on that kid, he was so able to portray an older, experienced man who had been through the effing apocalypse stuck in a teenager's body.
Yes.
He was good.
That's a load to bear.
The character very much reminds me of Pinocchio in Fables.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Where he's just sort of, by his very nature, is stuck in this preteen body forever.
The most amazing thing about the character for me is, he was a good actor. You know, it would be like what if Sam Elliott got trapped into a young boy's body.
I'll tell you one thing. The Big Lebowski would be a much different movie.
It would be a completely different movie.
It wouldn't be that much different at all.
It was the fact that... And this is going to sound really weird, right? But the way that he managed to portray the acting chops to portray living in this apocalyptic wasteland and falling in love with a mannequin, because that was the only connection, was amazing. That was perfectly acted. And I don't think
take
you're gonna...
that, Will Smith, and I Am Legend.
That couldn't be more different.
What?
He does talk to that mannequin.
Oh, that's true.
He does talk to one mannequin. He doesn't need to travel
About that. I was thinking about that the whole time for whatever reason. And I was like,
this
is why he's believable, but Will Smith couldn't make it believable. I don't know.
Because you hate Will Smith.
It's because he was afraid of commitment.
But that
five
was just
not afraid of commitment.
That's the impressive part of this. It's not even so much that he's a good actor. It's that he managed to convince me as a child that he fell in love with a mannequin and then goes back in time and finds another mannequin to fall in love with.
Yeah.
But
the same mannequin.
Not just any mannequin.
It's the same mannequin, yes.
It's
the
same
mannequin.
Damn mannequin. The damn
His interaction with Hazel and Cha-Cha, everything about that character, all of his scenes were probably my favorite parts of the show. It was just well written, well acted, well scripted, well handled. I think that is probably the strongest point for me because he is the glue that holds the storyline together. He's driving the plot.
He's the plot.
Yeah. So they couldn't
the plot.
That not strong.
Yeah.
Well, he exudes such confidence in the role, which is, I think that's what sells it, is mm-hmm. that. And then, you know, when you get to the action scenes, he's just this unstoppable.
Oh, my God. Those action scenes were amazing.
It's like the Denzel Washington, that Regulator guy film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Equalizer.
Equalizer, yeah. He sets his watch by it.
Regulator guy was Chris Elliott.
Yes.
Can we talk a bit about Diego?
You mean low-budget Batman?
Yeah, I feel like he gets a bad rap. Because
I actually like him a lot. I actually like the character quite a bit.
Because, yeah, and... he was a cool character in the sense that, you know, we talk on this show, and I think, you know, with the exception, and I think even Danae and I have talked about, you know, the dark comics, you know, when things got dark and gritty in the 90s. Like, this is their take on that, and how it, you know... He's the vigilante that's, you know, working with the cops and, you know, on the side and what that, you know, you sew type of thing and, you know, how he can't handle those emotions any better than anybody else, even though.
Especially when his girlfriend gets killed.
Oh, man. I really loved that, him, too.
Yeah.
That was a gut punch. That was a freaking gut punch. And that was so well done.
Yeah, because that's the difficult thing as a writer is knowing when to kill your children.
Yeah.
And that's a tough thing to do. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, you know, people are like, how dare you kill Glenn? Or,
yeah,
you know, especially after you pretended to kill Glenn a season or two before. That's not fair.
That's a lie. Yeah.
What I love about Diego is he is, in many ways, where Luther stuck around and played Umbrella Academy's solo career.
Right.
Diego was the only one who really, in a way, truly embraced Hargrave's vision.
Yeah.
But he just wanted to do it on his terms.
Right.
But he's the one who's, like, out there still doing what they did. And at first I'm thinking, what is he, like, Stab Man or Knifey Boy? But when they finally put some story behind it, is basically he favors knives because of their effectiveness.
He's Bullseye.
He's Bullseye, basically. Anything he throws is going to find it. He's Bullseye with the ability to actually defy physics.
Right. Yeah. Which is a cool character.
When I watched it the first time, like we strung it out over a few weekends because I didn't want to power through it. But then when I watched it the second time and it was just me and I could just zoom through the episodes, I really just, his character kind of faded into the background the first time. But I watched it the second time, I cared more about him because I knew where it went.
Yeah.
But at first I was just like, ugh, like he's that like burdened with glorious purpose, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that cookie cutter superhero crap that we are dealing with all the time. And so I think watching anything, if you enjoyed it the first time, watching it the second time, you get to enjoy different tidbits because you're not focusing on whatever. And that was the same thing with the Luther and Allison relationship for me, because the first time I was like, ugh, this feels forced and yucky. And then the second time I felt more the like, you know what, it's, they are the only people who would understand each other. And yeah. Like, who else would you be able to be with? And so I'm glad, because I really did not like Diego the first go around. And I do get where he comes from more and like him a lot better.
Yeah.
He's definitely...
Vanya, I still hate.
He's definitely the comic fan's character, you know?
Yeah.
In the show, like he's the Batman, he's the Wolverine, or the, you know,
he's the hook for the fanboys,
and then you go against trope so hard, which is like he has like the break, you know, he's broken, and not in that broken way where it's like Batman's broken, so he is the night. No, he's just a broken human. Like
he is the afternoon.
Danae brings up an interesting point about Vanya, though, and that is like I really wanted to like her. I really wanted to like her, and like, I don't know, she was just kind of like just milquetoast for me. Like, out of all the characters,
oh really?
She was the most milquetoast right up until the end.
I mean, to me, she seemed like the most troubled, because she got the short shrift all of her life, and I'm gonna go on record here.
She was the equivalent. Has anybody seen the Royal Tenenbaums?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, ages ago. Yeah.
She was the equivalent of Gwyneth Paltrow in the Royal Tenenbaums, where it's like she was reminded almost daily that she was adopted.
Yeah.
That's what she is.
Well, yeah, and the thing about it is, I mean, she's the one of all of Hargreaves' dick moves.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, robot moms are robots, so she can't really be blamed for anything. But Pogo was complicit, and I hated to see him go.
Yeah.
But it was really, like, a bad thing for Hargreaves, because he was doing it, and honestly, like, he couldn't control it, so she had to kill herself and everyone around her.
Yeah, he, I mean, just as far as he went knew, too long. But rather than try to, you know, at least Professor X gave Jean Grey a chance.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to put you under double secret probation.
I think the problem
is, but I'm still going to make you an X-Man.
Think about it is, I think that the problem with Hargreaves is he didn't know how to harness her powers.
Yeah, he probably, you know.
He didn't know what to do with her except sedate her.
Especially because there is an implicit history that he somehow figured out what the hell all the rest of these kids were capable of.
Yeah.
And then he saw in her something that scared the hell out of him. So he pulls a Luke Skywalker with Kylo Ren and just, like, starts shoving a bunch of Adderall down her and just keeps her, you know.
And as predictable, like I said, like, I knew, even, like, gosh, from, like, the first episode, I was like, she's going to be powerful. Like, even though you knew, to see how she came into it and to see the backstory, like, I was still interested in it. And as much as I ended up disliking her character, like, that's how you're supposed to feel. Like, that's the correct response. And so they did a good job of taking something that could have been, well, something that was blatantly obvious, but still making it intriguing and interesting.
And you really weren't sure what and when and how any of this was going to
how are we going to find out? Is it even going to be this season? Is it going to, are we going to later, what's going to trigger her?
And since we're on the subject of Vanya, I have to go on record and say I'm still on the fence on how I feel about Ellen Page's enormous forehead. Because, I mean, personally, I've never really had a thing for the leader or Hector Hammond or Melon Brainwave.
2019.
But I don't know. She can. She's one of the lucky ones because she can. She can play that.
I thought you were going to say she can get it. I'm like, yeah.
The thing is, I can't decide if enormous foreheads are sexy to me. I'm really right on the fence. I'm kind of leaning toward.
I mean, the amount of time spent on her enormous forehead tells me everything I need to know.
It's a soft wood. But
you got that like you got a nice pine going.
Yeah, it's like
all right.
It's like balsa.
Okay, I could make a plane for cosine.
Absolutely.
Out of, okay.
Like balsa. Holy shit!
There he goes, donkey laugh time, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
That got him.
I don't donkey laugh anymore.
You're a liar.
I am not a liar, sir. I have not donkey laughed in over 10 years.
It's not true. It's not
it is true.
That
is
so
true.
Untrue, you miserable piece of filth. That is a fanny pack, and you know it.
What the fuck?
Son of a bitch.
Yes.
What the actual fuck? What?
All right. Well, on that note, we need to start winding this down.
Yeah.
I have officially quoted, channeled, or implied over 100 different pop culture memes.
Well, you have done, in this episode of the show alone, you've gone the spectrum from Short Circuit to Deadpool 2.
I know.
The Scooby-Doo chase scene, for fuck's sake, man. I mean, seriously.
You have outdone yourself tonight, man.
I'm well inspired by our guests.
That's right. So, my final thoughts. Let's get some final thoughts.
I can't wait for season two. I seriously cannot wait for season two. If it's anything, I did read up a little bit on the comic series, and it takes place in Dallas. Yep. I'm like, okay, I'm already excited. I'm already pretty excited. So, yeah, like, bring it on. Bring on season two. Bring on the surprises. Bring on the shocks. Bring on, like, just everything that they're going to throw at us because it's going to be fun. I guarantee it's going to be fun. If season one was any indicator, it's going to be a lot of fun. So, yeah, there's my final thoughts on it.
All right,
yeah.
Danae.
I feel like as much as it's open-ended, they still put enough pretty bows where they needed to be and tied up enough loose ends that it makes it to where it can be a fresh season, even though it's a continuation. And I think that's really difficult to do, so I hope that they pull off season two really well, because when you are able to continue a story but still wrap up loose ends, mm-hmm. a lot of writers choke themselves with said ribbons. So I'm insanely excited about it. I knew it was going to get renewed. There was no way it wouldn't, because it did so incredibly well.
Yeah.
But I'm a lot of times, and this has happened because, and the three of you are a huge part of this. Me be going from being only DC to liking Marvel.
That's my fault. I can take that. I can take the blame for that.
I feel like it was like a group effort. I feel like at some point all of you sat around with Aaron too. Yep. I'm blaming you, Aaron. You and all sat around for like, how can we?
And Roy and Ben. So
it was like the end of Glass. We were all in the same place, and you walked out of the room, and all of a sudden it goes completely quiet. We're like, okay, how are we going to get Danae to watch all these Marvel movies?
I like better than that metaphor, because this is where I'm at now, because I love Marvel. But whenever I'm watching, you know, all these new things, and then you guys come in with this like rich comic history, a lot of the times it's overwhelming, and I'm like, I don't know where to start. But with this, I feel like it's a completely doable comic read for me. Yeah. And I am so in love with the characters, and I'm hearing good things from people who have read the comics, where, you know, a lot of time there's the disgruntled fanboys, and I'm not really hearing as much of that. Yep. And so it makes me not as nervous or lenient. And so I think this is I loved it so much, and, you know, there's going to be the downtime between this and season two where I'm going to not watch it for the third time, because that's ridiculous. And so I should definitely read the comic. And I find myself not doing that a lot. I tried it with Guardians of the Galaxy, because that was still like less comics to be read than trying to figure out where to start with Spider-Man. But I haven't felt that way in a long time, because it's very daunting to be a noob in the comic world.
It can be daunting, yes.
Comic readers light. Like, I can get in on this and not be too behind the curve.
Well, it helps to have some pathfinders can help.
Also, it's keep in mind, it's still daunting for the comic readers sometimes too.
Oh God, yeah.
To try to figure out where to hop, double dutch your way into something, and if you want to even bother trying to get into something new, because there's, you know, God knows what kind of history and continuity you're playing with.
Yeah. What have I missed all these years? Yeah.
So it's not just that. It's everything. So Cole, what do you think?
Well, first, I want to say that there's a theory going around in my head that the second season will actually be a cross-company crossover with Amazon, and we'll finally get to see the Time War from Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Jesus Christ. I want it to cross over with Patriot at some point. I want Jean-Claude Van Johnson to cross over with Patriot. It would be great.
But I want to say that this was one of those times where, you know, while Catherine and I were both giving the finger to the television at the end because of the way it ended, leaving us hanging, I haven't felt that satisfied. That was a satisfying couple of weeks. Where I deliberately waited until after AllCon. I had to force myself to wait.
Yeah.
To watch, because there just wasn't going – I could not give myself that much time. And it was well worth the wait, and it delivered on so many levels. And we just – I mean, I haven't even told Catherine the good news yet that there's a second season coming. Not that we can already see that coming. But the production – I cannot, there wasn't time tonight to talk about the production values of this series, from the depictions of the apocalypse and the destruction of the moon, and but you know, the bodysuit for when we get the reveal is exactly what it needed to be. The characterization and the realization of Pogo. I thought we were going to like see Pogo for 9 seconds every 16th episode.
No, you see him quite a bit, which is
exactly because that's like, it probably costs $6,000 a second.
Yeah.
Him to be on the screen.
Yeah, but Netflix is literally made of money, so why not?
Yeah.
So, you know, he cost more than the combined salary of the cast. And you don't hear anybody complaining about that sort of disparity in pay.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I guess you're right.
Yeah. People were complaining about what's your name in The Crown, and Doctor Who got more money. What about that damn monkey?
I'm gonna get you a shirt made. What about that damn monkey? Oh shit. Okay. I'm not gonna say anything because you guys have summed it up pretty much as well as I could have.
I think what about that damn monkey says it all.
I can't follow that. I can't follow what about that damn monkey. With that being said, Rick, do you have any pluggables? Is there anything you would like to plug?
Yes, actually, I do.
Here's gonna be a list.
No, hardly a list. Okay, so...
No, I just meant in a different context.
Oh, well, okay. I do need to give a shout-out...
This Green Lantern figure that I bought in 1986.
Whenever you're done.
I plug it in my butt.
Can you tell Rick's a teacher now?
Put it in my butt. Do you ever deal with students asking you what you put in your butt?
Thank God, no.
Okay, I'll work on that.
Couple things. I do need to give a shout out to a particular store in Burbank, California, because they've been nothing short of awesome, and they are very near and dear to my heart. There's a store on Magnolia Boulevard called Blast from the Past. If you ever find yourself in Burbank, California, get yourself to that store and just have your entire childhood like laid out before you in toy form. They have vintage toys. They have like toys that you just don't see anywhere. That's where I get my my score of Disney posters that I have up on the wall. That's where I get them, and I go there every trip, and I buy something new. I find something new every single time. That's where I found my Harryhausen figures, all that stuff. You can check them out on Facebook under Blast from the Past. As far as my podcast goes, United States of Geekdom is still live and kicking. We've just taken an extended break because life gets in the way. But you can find us at unitedstatesofgeekdom.blogspot.com. We are on Facebook under United States of Geekdom. We're on Twitter under Join the USG. Also, check out my Disney news feed, I guess it is now, which is Rediscovering the Magic. I post things daily on there. That's under Rediscovering the Magic with Rick and Friends podcast on Facebook. The podcast will eventually be revived once Danae and Roy and Ben and I can find the time to actually record an episode or two. That's my stuff. There you go.
There you go. Danae, what do you got?
I was still like tripping on what do you have to plug, because I just went like way deep off into the bad end of that. And
I got some Blade plugins that I like to plug in sometimes.
I don't want anything plugged at the end of this episode.
Cole
and I, you know, once we go radio silent.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, the damn monkey.
Okay, so I am also part of another podcast that is currently on a hiatus because, yes, life happened. I am one part of the magnificent duo of the Wonder Twin Powers Activate show with Aaron Prado. We still do random episodes here and there, and we still do panels at LubbockCon and such. So you can find us on Facebook at WTPA Show. We also are on Instagram. And then if you're into geeky mom stuff, that sounds like a Pornhub category.
Yeah, I visited that category. It's
geeky mom stuff.
Great.
You can follow my blog, which is bigbadmamawolf.wordpress.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram, and I post stuff about my cosplaying, my kids, and just about being a mom. I'm so interesting right now. My God.
You have a lot going on, though. Like,
yeah.
I have a lot going on right now. Like, I'm watching Queer Eye, so I'm really busy these days. So
listen, there's nothing more you could be doing, period, end of story. If I could get away with figuring out a way to do an episode of the three new seasons of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy on Hey Kids Comics, you bet your sweet ass I would be doing it right now, because Anthony figure is life.
We'll figure it out.
That would be the entire show. I'd just be me saying Anthony is life and tying a bandana around my neck. There, you have it. Imagine it in your mind for an hour. Done.
I'm just going to say hashtag tan is daddy. Thank you.
I'm so uncomfortable. Cole, clean me up a little. Plug our stuff, will you?
You know, that's the fifth time this month you've said that to me.
I know.
And it's only the second. Well, we are, of course, coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. Damn it. You can write to us at whatever the hell, jcumail@yahoo.com.
That's it.
And Andy knows all the other places you can find us. And if you're keen on the – if you like the Star Wars, Eddie Medina and I do the Rancor Pit live on the first and third Sundays of every month over at DallasOnAir.com, live streaming from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central, preceded on the first Sunday by Eddie and Colleen and his wife Colleen's show Figments, the Unexplained Mysteries podcast, and on the third Sundays of the month by Isle of Toys, A-I-S-L-E, where I myself and usually a guest of some kind to talk about all kinds of toys and toy manufacturers and toy things, and because I love toys, and much like that shop in Burbank, when I need my whole childhood laid out before me, I walk into my studio and say airfare.
That's true. And as far as we go, you can find us at HK Comics Show, you know, the Grams and the Twitter, tweet. So Fanny's, there you go. Rick, Danae, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. This was an amazing journey through an amazing show.
It was a pleasure to have me on the show.
All I gotta say is, if you're gonna keep doing the Netflix, bring me on.
And Werther's Originals in your purse? What was that? Are you kids watching the Netflix? Sorry.
Crank out. Sabrina and Riverdale.
It's happening. It's going to happen. We know it has to happen. It just hasn't happened yet.
For you guys, yeah.
Oh, and hey, gang, next week on What Did We Just See?
Oh, yeah.
We're hoping that I sent word out to another of our favorite guests, Kelly Long.
I sat down with her today, so it's going to happen.
Okay, yeah. So next week, she'll be joining us apparently for The Marvelous Miss Danvers.
Yes. Nice. Yes.
Where we talk about Shazam.
Her quote was, "Whatever, just I'll do it." So,
so yeah, we'll be talking about Captain Marvel, which was just a treat, and
it was. So buy, collect, enjoy your comics, and Danae, 100% serious, start writing TV show and movie reviews, and I will read them every day. Say goodnight, everybody.
In exactly that way.
Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.